I'm Don Bradley, and welcome to Gospel Tangents.
It's the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett, and we're a proud supporter of the Dialogue Podcast Network. It's a collective of independent, interesting podcasts who promote thoughtful, respectful, and engaging inquiry and discussion from all aspects of the LDS tradition, thought, arts, and culture. Find out more at dialoguejournal.com/podcastnetwork. That's dialoguejournal.com/podcastnetwork. You'll be interested in the latest episodes there. When Lehi left Jerusalem, they didn't know where to go. One day, he came out of his tent and he found a mysterious ball called the Liahona. While there are some details in the Book of Mormon, historian Dodd Bradley has found out some more details that aren't in the Book of Mormon. How does he know? He's checked out some amazing sources, and so we'll learn more about this amazing object, the Liahona, in our next conversation with Don Bradley. You won't want to miss it. And oh, by the way, let me just mention, if you want a cool t-shirt like this, or maybe a red one, or a black one, or a blue, or green, or yellow, or whatever color you want, go to gospeltangents.com/shop. If you send me a photo of yourself wearing one of those t-shirts, I'll send you a free PDF of the transcript of your choice. So send that to gospeltangents@gmail.com and help support Gospel Tangents. Now back to our conversation. One of the other interesting things that I found from your book was your discussion of the Liahona. I thought you had some fascinating insights in that. So tell us more about the Liahona.
So there are a few things about the Liahona that emerge from the evidence of what was in the Lost Pages. So one of them would be just more about how the Liahona worked. So we've got multiple accounts that mention the Liahona, accounts relating to like Lost Pages. Excuse me. So one of these is from a close associate of Martin Harris, Gladden Bishop. Another is from Fayette Latham, who interviews Joseph Smith Sr. in 1830. And, you know, in the Book of Mormon text that we have, there's not a lot of discussion, really. The Liahona functions prominently in the narrative of Lehi's Exodus, but there's really not anything said about the origin of the Liahona or much said about the function of the Liahona, how it works, and sort of the place also that it may have had, sort of the religious function, the place it may have had in Nephite religion going forward after this Exodus. What significance does it have to these people after their Exodus? So in the extant account in First Nephi, you know, Lehi just opens up his tent door one morning and there's this round ball laying on the ground, and it has pointers in it, and it points them to food. It points them, so this is how they get provisions in the wilderness, right? This is the means of their sustenance. It points them to where they should go to head toward their new promised land. So it mentions, though, that there are two spindles. And why do you need two spindles, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
A compass just has one.
Yeah, right? Compass just has one. What's the second spindle for? So there's been, you know, there've been thoughts from people about what the second spindle might have been for, because it's not obvious, right? So in one of these accounts, from Gladden Bishop, close friend of early saint in Kirtland, and then a very close associate of Martin Harris, who basically milks him for information about the coming forth of the Book of Mormon, what the sacred relics. So Martin Harris, recall, not only hears about these relics closely from Joseph Smith and is there for the translation of most of the lost manuscript that gave a more detailed account of Lehi's Exodus and so forth. Martin Harris is also one of the three witnesses, and in their experience he sees these relics. So he has a few independent lines of information about these sacred relics, right? How they functioned in the story, how they looked, and so on. And in Gladden Bishop's description, he says that around the outside of the Liahona, and it's still difficult for me to picture exactly, you know, what it was supposed to look like. But it sounds like he's talking about a face, like maybe a compass face, right? And there are 24 diagrams or like symbols around that central circle. And so the pointers can point to these symbols. And so he doesn't go into detail then about how the Liahona functions, but if you picture it as having these like symbols along the outside of a circle and then having two spindles in it, suppose that Lehi and his family want to go get food. Or suppose that they're going to be led to get food. Like, how will they know what the Liahona is pointing them to? How will they know if it's pointing them to the promised land or to food or to water or to some other necessity, right? Well, the pictures around that central circle could be pictures telling what it's pointing to. So one pointer could point to, you know, picture of wild game, right? And then another pointer points the direction, so the function of the two spindles, right, would be it points them to something and it also tells them what it's pointing them to.
So you're saying for now you need to find food, so I'm going to point to food,
right?
And then later on I need to point to water, so I'm going to point to water. So you've got one of them's kind of a pictograph of what, right, what it wants you to do, and the other,
right,
one's saying the direction you're supposed to go.
Right, right. One identifies the direction, and one identifies why you should go that direction. What's waiting for you
that's really interesting.
When you get there.
Right? Yeah.
And so another interesting question that emerges in the Fayette Lapham account, well, that emerges in the Book of Mormon text that we have. It's been pointed out by scholars, but it's not answered in the text that we have, but it's answered by one of these sources that I use to reconstruct the lost pages, this Fayette Lapham interview. So if you look early in the Book of Mormon narrative, the Liahona is crucial. They're using it. It's not just a sacred relic. It is a sacred relic. It's not just a sacred relic. It's an instrument of revelation. They use it for practical purposes. They use it for their exodus. Later on in the Book of Mormon, so like after where the lost manuscript ended, when it picks up in our Book of Mosiah, shortly after that, King Mosiah II sends Ammon, the first Ammon, down to the land of Nephi to find whatever happened to Zenob's people. And they don't know the way anymore back to the land of Nephi. They don't know how to get there. And so they wander in the wilderness for 40 days because they don't know where they're going. So if they had the Liahona, why don't they just use the Liahona and point them to the land of Nephi? Why didn't King Mosiah the First just say, okay, what direction should they travel? Right? What's the straight line to the land of Nephi? Why didn't he just lend Liahona to Ammon? He takes it down there. Why, during all the wars in the Book of Alma, when they don't know where the Lamanites are at, which direction they need to go in the wilderness to find the Lamanites or escape the Lamanites, why don't they just use the Liahona? Well, the thing is, they have the Liahona. Alma 37 shows that it's been handed down generation to generation. So the Fayette Lapham account actually tells us that when in the Lost Pages they are led to, that actually someone might identify as Mosiah the First is on an exodus. He's led to he's led by the Liahona on his exodus. He's led to the interpreters. This is how they find the interpreters. Once he starts using the interpreters, the Liahona stops working. It's replaced. And so that's an unanswered question in our Book of Mormon text that was answered in the Lost text. And then, lots of things about the Liahona from the Lost Pages. Another one has to do with this theme that I was talking about of exile and restoration, or loss and restoration, right? So the Lehites, they've lost Promised Land, Sacred City, Temple of Solomon. They've lost the relics in Solomon's temple. And these relics were crucial, right? They had symbolic purposes. They also had revelatory purposes. And they represented the presence of God. So in the Ark of the Covenant, within the Holy of Holies, you had the stone tablets that had been touched by the finger of God. And so some of God's presence was sort of understood to inhere, to remain in those tablets, right? Mm-hmm. So that they were the presence of God, in a sense, within the Holy of Holies. So in the Epistle to the Hebrews, it actually says that in the Ark of the Covenant, along with the stone tablets, you also had Aaron's rod that budded and a pot of manna. And these are two relics or memorials of the Exodus of Moses. So they represent different aspects of God's providence during the Exodus. So what you have there, Aaron's rod that budded, was used during the biblical Exodus as an instrument of revelation or divination. It was used to determine which of the tribes of Israel was going to be the priestly tribe, so the tribe of Levi. Each tribe put in a rod, and the idea was that overnight, one of these was supposed to miraculously form buds, even though it's a dead stick, right? It's not a live tree. It's supposed to shoot forth buds, and that would show which tribe was the one chosen to be the priestly tribe. So this rod is an instrument of revelation. That's kept in the Ark of the Covenant. The other one is the pot of manna. Well, what is manna? Manna is the sustenance that the children of Israel are given during their Exodus. It's their the source of divine providence for them, right? It's how they're going to survive, how they're going to eat while they're going through the wilderness. And the way that they acquire the manna is initially they just wake up one morning and it's there on the ground, and it's actually in these round clumps, it says in the Hebrew Bible. And they initially don't know what it's for, but they discovered that you can eat it. And so this is how they survive in the wilderness. So some of that manna is preserved in this pot. And so it's these two relics in the Ark of the Covenant together are representing two facets of divine providence during the Mosaic Exodus. One is revelation that God's giving them during that Exodus, right, through this instrument, the rod. And the other is sustenance, miraculous sustenance that he's giving them through this food that they find in these round balls on the ground, right? So when the Nephites also keep a store of relics from their Exodus. They have their own sacred relics. They have their own memorials of Lehi's Exodus. And the main relic of their Exodus that they have is the Liahona itself. What is the Liahona? Well, it's an instrument of revelation, like, or divination, like Aaron's rod, right? It's also the source of their sustenance in the wilderness. And as I mentioned earlier, the way that it's found is Lehi opens up his tent door in the morning, and there he finds this round ball on the ground, right? And this is what gives them their sustenance. It leads them to food. Just like it's an exact parallel with the manna, yeah. Right? On their Exodus, they open up the tent door, they go out, and there's also a round ball on the ground. This time you can eat it, right? So in the one case, it's something you can eat. In the other case, it's an instrument of revelation that shows you where to find what you can eat. In each case, they keep a sacred relic of their Exodus that represents God's providence in sustaining them through their Exodus. So the Liahona parallels these memorials of the biblical Exodus that were kept in the Ark of the Covenant. And actually, this is the case with all of the Nephite relics. Each of the Nephite sacred relics has a parallel to the biblical sacred relics that were associated with the Ark of the Covenant or the biblical high priest. So an obvious one, right, is that the biblical high... So I should mention the high priest is associated with the Ark of the Covenant. He's the one guy who once a year can go and access the Ark of the Covenant on the Day of Atonement. On the Day of Atonement, he uses the Ark of the Covenant as an altar on which he sprinkles sacrificial blood, right? So the high priest, he wears various symbolic elements of clothing, different priestly garments. Among them, he wears an engraved gold plate on his forehead. It's the one engraved gold plate mentioned in the entire Bible. And it's one of the high priestly vestments or relics. So the idea of engraved gold plates in the Book of Mormon as a sacred relic, right, it parallels the high priestly relics. A more obvious one that people have picked up on since the early 1830s or even back in the 1820s is that the biblical high priest wore a breastplate to which attached the two stones, Urim and Thummim, right? And so in the Book of Mormon, they had a breastplate to which attached the two stones, the interpreters, which early Latter-day Saints started calling the Urim and Thummim because of the biblical parallel. So that's the case with all, you know, even the other relics, sacred relics that the Nephites kept are parallel to temple relics of ancient Israel. And so these sacred relics that Joseph Smith finds in the stone box are the Nephite temple relics. They're their equivalent to the biblical Israelite temple relics.
That's fascinating. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with historian Don Bradley. In our next conversation, we'll address the critics that believe that Don takes the Book of Mormon too seriously.
I'm not doing like faith-based archaeology or something looking for Zarahemla, right? I'm trying to figure out, as you were indicating, I'm trying to figure out what was in a certain lost manuscript. Now, while it's controversial whether there were Nephites, it's not controversial that there was an initial Book of Mormon manuscript that got stolen. And so what I'm trying to do is figure out what was in that manuscript. So for that question, it's really irrelevant whether one thinks there were Nephites or not. It's irrelevant whether there were Nephites or not. It may be very important for other issues, but it's not important for knowing what was in the lost pages.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please support Gospel Tangents and become a subscriber. For just $5 a month, go to patreon.com/gospeltangents and you can hear the entire interview. And you can also get transcripts available in either our Amazon website, or if you want to give the money to me and not Amazon, please subscribe on my website at gospeltangents.com and you can click the yellow subscribe button. Of course, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, and all the other places. Make sure you subscribe on iTunes at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. And don't forget to click here to subscribe on YouTube, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again for listening.